It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Kevin Toefel and Stacey Higginbotham are here. We got our new Pixel 3s. We'll play with them at the beginning of the show. We'll talk about the new Google Home Hub, how it differs from Lenovo and the other displays with Google Assistant built in. And Stacey has a pick that might make your email more private. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 478, recorded Wednesday, October 17th, 2018. When a doorbell rings, a roadie gets its wings. This Week in Google is brought to you by Cashfly. Make this the last month your CDN bill gives you a headache. Join the thousands of others who trust Cashfly's reliable network. For a complimentary, detailed analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends, how much you can save at Cashfly, visit twit.cashfly.com. And by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today. For 3 months free with a one-year package, go to expressvpn.com/twig. And by Capterra. Find software solutions for your business needs. Capterra is a free website with over 600 categories of business software. Visit capterra.com/twig and get your free copy of the Big Book of Free Software. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from the Googleverse. Jeff Jarvis is on assignment in Canada, in the Great White North. But that's okay. Stacey Higginbotham's here from stacyonIoT.com. And, hi, Stacey. Looks like it's freezing in Austin. That can't possibly be the case.
It's okay. It's not really freezing. My office is really cold. It's like 50 degrees here.
That's pretty. It's chilly if you're used to 105.
So it was 90 degrees on Sunday, and then it was 45 on Monday.
I hate those swings like that. Also with us, her cohort, partner in crime, former Giga Omer as well, Mr. Kevin C. Toefel. Of aboutchromebooks.com. Hello, Kevin.
Hello. Right now, I'm all about this playground on the Pixel.
We've been playing with it. So, Kevin, did you get a review unit or just get your Pixel today?
This is a review unit.
Okay. Mine, the official one that I bought, came today, and I got black. I didn't have the fortitude, shall we say, to get the pink one, not pink one. And now I wish I had, because this is very black.
Boring.
I have with me the Pixel 2, so we could kind of compare. On the backs, they're very similar looking, although the Pixel 2, which is the white one, had a metal back. This has a plastic back, but they feel, or a glass back, I guess. I don't know.
It's all glass. Yep.
It feels very similar, two-toned, kind of. This is more rounded, and you probably can't see it, and it feels a little bit more solid. Maybe a little thicker. It's really hard to tell. I guess not.
Does it feel like it's going to fall out of your hands? I mean, every time I have with the glass cases, I feel like I'm going to break this sucker.
It's not that. It doesn't feel slippery particularly. I have to say the screen is awesome. It really looks painted on. And you know what? I forgot within seconds about the notch, but maybe that's because I use an iPhone XS. But doesn't that screen look super solid? This is one of the Google Live wallpapers.
I called it last week. We found out they used Samsung.
Yep. So, in other words, this looks every bit as good as, say, a Note 9 or an S9.
The Display Mate people, is that who reviews all the screens? Yeah, they came out with their report this week, and they said it's an A+. I don't know if it's quite as good as the ones that Samsung uses for their own phones, but I mean, if you can tell the difference, you know, I'll give you a dollar because that's impressive.
Now, I turned on boosted colors, which makes it look very much like a Samsung, but you know what? This does make sense. It's a Samsung display because it has the same options the Samsung displays have. Natural. See if you could tell the difference in the picture of flowers. I don't think on the stream you'll be able to. Boosted, which is just a little more vibrant. And then adaptive. It came set up with natural. But I'm thinking adapt is probably a sensible choice, right? Adapting to the...
Does that mean like when you lower the blinds, it's going to react?
Or? No, I think it... Well, that's a good question. My guess is, and on the Samsung phones, it means it adapts to the content.
Right.
So, it, you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. I like Boosted, to be honest with you. But those icons do really look painted on. I mean, and the text is very super crisp. I set it a little bit larger text for my old eyes.
Now, you have the notch. Mine is notchless.
Oh, you have the little one, the little bitty guy.
No.
Oh, you turned off the notch.
I did.
There's the notch.
I don't mind it either, but I'm trying to get, trying to figure out which I like better.
So you have a double chin phone.
I have a double chin phone, but it's a little more symmetrical as a result. Whoops, let's do that. There's no consumer facing way to do this, but you can do it in the developer options. You know, tap the build number, and then you can get an option to turn the notch off.
I've been thinking about the notch because people really hate the notch, and I've been looking at this notch, and I think the reason people hate the notch, Apple, you'll find an article somewhere by a designer, I think it's on Medium, about Apple's notch and the curves they use for the notch and the detail they put. Google didn't. They didn't really pay as much. You know what? If I should get my iPhone 10 so you could see. But Google didn't quite pay as much attention. And so this looks more like it's certainly a bigger notch, but it also looks, it's hard to describe it. It looks more aggressively notchy than Apple's notch, which is not only more shallow. Here, this is your phone though, right? All right. So.
It looks like a tab in Chrome upside down.
How are we going to see the notch? There it is. You can kind of see the notch there. So see how much shallower and wider the Apple notch is than the Google notch. I think also, though, and this is really subtle, but look at how the curves are on the Apple notch. Apple put apparently a great deal of design into those curves. And look at the curves in the Google notch. And as a result, the Google notch almost looks like it's coming in on itself at the top. It looks like a face.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people more are objecting to than the size of the notch, to be honest. In any event, I think it's a tempest in a teapot. I don't think it's going to bother anybody. We're used to notches now. Camera has to go somewhere. It's got go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if I tally up all the time in my life I've now spent talking about notches.
I know.
I could have eaten a really nice dinner.
Uh-huh.
Maybe done a couple workouts.
I personally am more perturbed about the lack of a headphone jack, but we just have to kind of give up on that, I guess.
Oh, man, my husband, he's got an iPhone 6? Was that the last one?
Yeah. My mom won't give up her iPhone 6S because she doesn't want to. She uses the headphones.
Yeah. He's like, it's small and it has a headphone jack. Two things I want in a phone. So I'm like, oh, buddy, I hope that lasts. But it's out of support now.
Right.
This coming year or this year?
Yeah. No, he's going to have to get a Samsung phone. This comes with, and Dieter Bohn in The Verge said these are actually, they're $30 Type C headphones, but he said, they're actually surprisingly good quality. And at least this time, the Type-C works with all Type-C devices. So I'll try it because, as you can see, I just got this. I haven't had a chance. But I'll try it with the Samsung Type-C and other Type-Cs. Essential Phone had a Type-C headphones as well that didn't work with everything. Only worked with the Essential. So
its own issues.
Yeah, this doesn't really, right. This doesn't solve the problem, though, because you can't charge. Well, I guess you can if you've got wireless. And by the way, I'm waiting for it. If it comes, we'll open it up today, the Pixel C or Pixel 3 charger, which I also ordered. But I put this on a Samsung rapid charger, and I was able to charge it sideways. So I could have the phone sideways, listen to the headphones, and still charge it if you're using wireless. These headphones are
interesting.
Good
for watching movies.
Yeah, right. These headphones are interesting because they have an in-ear loop. Which would I
an
presume
in-ear loop?
An in-ear, so this is going to go in the inside of the ear
and stabilize it.
Yeah,
yeah. It's adjustable.
Let me just try it. Yeah, it does. It's nice and it is adjustable, just like the buds, right? So you can. I think that's actually a nice touch.
I have such sensitive ears. I think I have both small ears and sensitive ears because I've got like my Jabra ones.
Yeah.
I can only keep those in for like 2 hours and then like my whole ear gets sore.
It hurts. Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. So
and
what
I,
do you do?
I have this,
you can't use.
I take out my headphones and I read a book.
Yeah. Well, the other option is this, and these are molded to your ear. You have to go to an audiologist and they pour stuff in your ear and you have to sit still for 2 minutes and then they pull it out.
There used to be a company that took your camera phone and you actually stuck a quarter next to your ear.
I think they're still around. Yeah, I don't know how well that works.
Okay.
These are very comfortable as a result because I wear these all day on some days, right?
So, well, that's your job.
It is my job. And I know, I like, you know, as a radio host for years, always wore over the ear, soft over the ear headphones, like those AKG K240s. And I still wear those in the studio. In the other studio, I like them. But these are better for on camera because you can't really see them. These are I think of them as the Bono headphones.
Well, I tell you what, if you ever, I'll try those out when you guys pay for them.
Yeah. They're only $1,000.
Exactly.
From Ultimate Ears. So the funny thing is, though.
What was that?
That was good.
Yeah. We have
more of that.
We got a new technical director. Carson's got the week off. You know what Carson's doing, by the way? He's building a haunted house for his kids' school.
Oh,
nice.
He is awesome. Yeah.
He's Carson. A man of many talents. But I was just saying, these $1,000 headphones, I think they're J Audio is the manufacturer. Former, I see it used to be. They use a headphone jack, so I can't use them with anything except old fashioned, obsolete studio gear. The day studio gear loses headphone jacks is the day I retire.
You have an adapter with the Pixel 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes
a dongle.
It actually comes with several adapters.
I can't even get it out of the box.
Here, I'll show you. Yeah.
Because mine's stuck in there.
I got it. Okay. Yeah, you're stuck in a TV. It comes with a C2C connector, which is very handy when you're copying your data over. And if your phone is not that kind of phone, a Type C phone, it also comes with a Type A to Type C adapter for the same purpose. And even though Apple no longer includes it, it's got a Type C to headphone jack adapter. Apple's decided, according to Apple, nobody uses headphones anymore that use, you know, headphone jacks. So we're just not going to bundle those anymore. Everybody's on Bluetooth now. This is, you know, I think this is, so far, I'm liking this. And I've been taking pictures. And I do have to say, I feel like the portrait mode and the picture modes are pretty good. Here, let me see if I can find some pictures. These are low light shots, behind-the-scenes studio shots. Actually, I should pull these up on Google Photos because by now they're copied over to Google Photos. But look at that. That's a portrait of my wife. I think that's really nice. And that's in portrait mode, so I can do the slider. It actually did top shot for some reason. They're the same. So I get to choose. Oh, well, I get it. One's in portrait.
Normal.
And one's normal. I get it. So how do I do the slider? Is that this?
That should be
there?
In the edit settings down below. Well, there's your color pop.
Nope. Oh, there it is. Tap to change focus. So I could focus.
Well, that's gonna do the color.
Oh. Oh, should I do the color pop and just make her face be color? Oh, yeah, everything else is back in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool.
That's like those, remember in like the 90s, those little art pictures of kids?
Yeah. Yeah. All those silly effects are back, baby.
Okay.
I'm actually pretty excited. I think this is going to be a very nice phone, personally. I'll have to add effects to make professional looking photos, but how? I don't know. Backup. Oh, I have to turn all this stuff on, huh? Now it's copying to Google Photos. So, when you first get it, this happened last year. I seem to remember you plug the cable into your old Google phone. If you have Type C to Type C or use the adapter, it'll copy a lot of that stuff over. I was able to set this up literally about 15 minutes, even downloading all the apps and everything. I'll have to log into a few things because it doesn't copy passwords over, but a very easy setup. It looks exactly the same as my Pixel 2, if you're moving from Pixel 2. And they now do a similar setup if your carrier supports it. If you're a Google Fi user, it's funny. I took the SIM. I'm so used to it. I took the SIM popper, popped the SIM the slot out of my Pixel 2. There's no SIM in it. I went, whoops. And I realized they don't do SIMs anymore. It's SIMless.
What?
Seamless. Yeah. So if you're on Google Fi, or I presume other carriers support it, it'll do that automatically. You just say, yeah, I'm with Google Fi. And it goes, oh, okay, fine. You want to transfer everything, the number over? Yeah. And so now this is my Fi phone. What do you think, Kevin? You like the feel?
I do. It's a little bit big for my hands, but it feels really well made. It is an all glass back, and yet this bottom third or two thirds is frosted glass. It's frosted Gorilla Glass. So it has that soft touch feel, which is amazing to me.
But yeah, I don't think it's slippery. Scratches. I don't feel like it's slippery at all.
No.
But of course, you use cases, don't you, Stacey? You're not going to go caseless.
Oh, yeah. No, but I use cases in part because I don't trust my ability to hold on to these things.
Well, I think you'd probably want to get a case on this too, because it's definitely
a glass sandwich. I drop my phone once a week.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So I always get, I get these standardized, this is from Ringke, R-I-N-G-K-E, but there's millions of companies. They're under $10, just rubber sleeve that gives it grip. Mm-hmm. Protects. It doesn't protect the front, but it protects the sides and the back. I don't know. I'm excited. Friday, Lisa and I are going to go into San Francisco, and we're going to go do some a photo shoot in Chinatown, try to get some low light and different kinds of pictures so we could show them on the new screensavers in next week on this show.
If you do any more portraits, the setting for depth, changing the depth after the fact, it's not with the filters. It's the next one over where you would edit the light, color, etc.
Ah. Thank you for doing that research.
Sure.
So I click
the little slider next to the share, not that one. Yep.
That one. And then
click it again.
This one?
Yeah, the slide depth.
Oh, look at that. Oh, that's pretty sweet. Okay.
Change the bokeh.
Now look at it where it's challenging for all these phones. Is the hair. Look at that strand of hair on the right. Let's see. Yeah, see, it's gone out of focus, even though it's in the roughly same focal plane as your head. Those are always the challenging things, to figure out what's part of her and what's not. And it looks like there's some trouble with her fingers as well. Let's see. Not too bad. The knuckles have gone out of focus.
Who wants their knuckles in focus? It's wrinkly and
I know. Let's unfocus. Yeah, you see the pinky? It shouldn't really be going out of focus with the table, but it is.
My knuckles are my best feature. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm going to discard changes. I think it's a great shot, though.
What you need, though, is that ring to be in focus.
Yeah.
Color pop on the ring.
Just zoom in and the ring, huh?
Yeah. I mean, that's what people are going to be looking at.
That's what they're looking at.
Her hair pieces looked really good there when you zoomed in on it.
Yes, because it's all in rough focus. But see this? This is actually a perfect example. So yeah, that strand is in focus above the table.
Yes. Oh, okay. I do see.
And then out of focus below the table. That's exactly the problem. And Apple's portrait mode has exactly that problem as well. It's unfortunate but you know what? You have to really pixel peep to see it. If you're looking at the picture, if you looked at this on Instagram, unless you're looking for it, you're going to say, no, that looks great. So I think that's the lighting and the color. Now, Kevin, not every feature is turned on this camera yet, right?
See, I can't figure that out because the whole night sight thing, I think, is not there yet. And I've seen some reviewers saying, look at these dark photos that we took in night sight.
They're not even doing it yet.
I don't think you did. And they're not even that good. So I'm thinking not. But
I think not either, because I'm getting motion blur with its low light. And one thing we know is it'll go as low as a quarter of a second, which you cannot handhold a quarter of a second. No. It'll have blur in it, and the people will be blurry. When that night sight comes in, it's going to take, what did they say, 15 images, and then pick and choose image stuff, and it'll be able to do that. Some of the images will be as slow as a quarter of a second, but not all. I don't think that's doing that yet.
Yeah, I wish they had actually had that in the demo room at the event, saying, here, we've got this dark area set up.
Right.
And this one device has night sight, so you get an idea. Yeah. But all we got was the comparison of the XS versus the Pixel 3 on stage.
Right. I think, 3.9 million of these last year, that's all Google sold. It's a minor blip in the phone universe, less than a week's worth of iPhone sales. But I think, this is, we're Google fans, and this is the Android phone of choice, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. It is big.
We're this week in Google.
Right.
Come on.
It's not this week in iPhones. All right. Enough of that. Let me take a break. We'll come back. We've shown you the Pixel. Maybe before the show's over, we'll get the charging stand. One of the questions I had on the charging stands is they showed some stuff, special stuff, that it happens when it's on the charging stand. Well, after looking in the settings, it looks like that special stuff also can be on any time. is charging. Things like the clock and dimming and all that stuff. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah. The one thing that I don't know about yet is the slideshow, right? That's where they're duplicating the Home Hub's slideshow capability. Have you figured that out yet?
Yeah, I've got the live albums on there, and I also tested the Nest doorbell integration. So after the break, I can.
But do you have to have, the question is, do you have to have the Google wireless charger for that to work?
I believe so. I suspect there's an NFC bit in the charger. Okay. I'm taking a guess because I have a Samsung wireless charger and it charges the phone rapidly, but I don't get any of those extra features.
Oh, you don't? Okay, good. Never mind. So there's a Pixel Stand app that turns on all of those features. Somebody in the chat room says the Stand app came out today.
I don't have a Stand app, and I never got one. But it works.
Oh, well, maybe they put it on there just for you.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I'll see it.
I don't know. All right.
Well, let's see what the Stand app does. We'll go to the break and figure this out while you're reading ads.
That's what the ads are for. Okay, everybody, go make a sandwich. No, it's time to talk about CashFly. The show is brought to you literally by the folks at CashFly. That's our CDN, our content distribution network. If you're in the business of getting data to customers, whether it's a podcast, an app, I think a lot of businesses these days, in fact, could use a CDN. Content distribution network is designed to give you high-speed downloads for your customers. Part of the way that works, and CashFly works, is because it has multiple servers all over the world. So when you download Twit, you're getting it from a server near you. That really does make a difference. But the thing I love about CashFly, and we've been using them since we started using CDNs. I mean, I've used them the whole time from, I think, a decade now on Twit. CashFly's been building trusted CDN relationships since 2002, is 100% availability with a bulletproof 100% SLA. That means you're never down. That means no more 3 a.m. phone calls. The server's down. The CDN's down. No. I love it. I really love it. We have never had a problem with outages at CashFly. Plus, the price is right. CashFly, on average, saves customers more than 20%. And actually, I'll tell you how you can find out exactly how much they'll save you. They've got the best agile techs that will answer all your questions the first time without passing you around to five different departments. Really smart people. And we have a great relationship with them because our CashFly contract is based on our usages. We're not locked into an inflexible contract. Our contract with CashFly is built around our unique demand and traffic patterns. We literally send out petabytes of data every month from the Twit servers on CashFly, petabytes, and knowing that it's not going to suddenly hit me if one show gets a lot of downloads, it's awesome. I don't have to check my CDN bill every day to see, are we okay? Did we exceed our limits, et cetera, et cetera. I love CashFly. Join the thousands of others who trust CashFly's reliable network. Let CashFly give you some sanity back. No more 3 a.m. phone calls. You want to find out how much CashFly can save you? They're giving away a complete detailed analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends if you go right now to twit.cashfly.com. Twit.cashfly.com. See if you might be leaving 20% or more on the table. And you know what? You already use CashFly every time you download one of our shows, so you know how good it is. Twit.cashfly.com.
You know who could have used CashFly? Yesterday.
Google. YouTube.
YouTube.
So I'm in the chat room yesterday doing the show. Somebody's saying, I'm getting a lot of 500s. And I said, okay, which of our sites? What is the problem? What's going on? It's YouTube.
Yeah, it went off right in the middle of the Beto-Ted Cruz debate. So,
oh, dear.
I was sitting there talking to my dad, who is politically on the other side of the fence from me. And we're like having this nice text-based go-round. And then he's like, ah! And I was like, score for Beto. And he's like, no, YouTube just went down.
Like, oh. It affected users in the U.S., Australia, Asia, and Europe. The service was back up around 11 p.m. Eastern time Tuesday. I don't know if Google has explained what happened, but you would have gotten
a postmortem yet.
Yeah, network 503 error. Southeast Asia also affected. Team YouTube on Twitter, because nobody would read their Google Plus page. Team YouTube said, thanks for your reports about YouTube, YouTube TV, and YouTube music access issues. They're, I guess they're all on the same CDN. We're working on resolving this. We'll let you know once it's fixed. We apologize for any inconvenience. Wouldn't it be funny if YouTube moved to CashFly because of this?
Does YouTube have a dashboard for services?
That's a good question. They ought to.
Google does. Google has one for all their services.
So Google, it's under Google. Okay.
It is. It is.
Because I remember during the World Cup, remember it going down? YouTube TV? Mm-hmm. That was incredibly frustrating. I was watching the game. And here's the Google Cloud status dashboard.
That doesn't have,
does it not have YouTube?
YouTube. That's
no.
for their professionals.
Oh, that's the enterprise type stuff and cloud stuff.
Yeah.
That's how World Cup. It's just a billion people.
Just a billion people. It was like an important game, too. I can't remember, but I was really peeved.
Oh, they're all important in World Cup.
They're all important.
I'm a big football guy. Sorry.
If it's a sporting event, it's super important to someone.
If it's a debate between Beto and what's Cruzy?
Ted Cruz.
What is Donald Trump's nickname for Ted Cruz?
Lion Ted.
Lion Ted. Is it allowed for Beto to use Lion Ted, or is that trademark Trump properties?
I don't think Beto really wants to be like Trump. That's my
Lion Ted. Didn't Ted Cruz's family assassinate President Kennedy? Am I wrong on that? I've heard people say that.
Couldn't have been his dad because he was the Zodiac killer.
Oh, that's right.
He had to be busy.
I thought Cruz was the Zodiac killer.
Oh, well, maybe.
No,
maybe.
He's Grandpa Munster on TV's Munsters show. I'm sorry. We shouldn't get into this. Your dad will hate
us. Nope. Nope.
So we don't know yet what's going on. We don't know why YouTube went down. And I presume it didn't have anything to do with the debate.
Probably not. No.
No. So this is interesting, and when you get your Pixel Stand, you'll see what I see, I think. There is no Pixel Stand app on my Pixel 3.
Oh.
Instead, in fact, Leo, you probably can go see this. In the settings of the phone, there's a connected devices option where you do Bluetooth NFC. Yeah. You click in there, and it doesn't show up in there either, but because I've already paired my phone to the Pixel Stand, I go into previously connected devices, and I have Pixel Stand showing up in there with settings.
Aha.
And in the settings, I can tell it, here's what I want to do. I can turn the screen off after dark. I can do not disturb. The neat thing is, and I found this out through Android Police while you're doing the ad, you can have multiple stands and configure them differently. One at work, one at home.
Yeah, because it's by pairing.
It is. So there has to be some communication method. And in fact, Android Police says they've checked it on a Pixel 2, even with the Pixel Stand app installed, and it doesn't give you these options and features. So you may be able to get the app, but I don't think it's going to do anything for you.
Keep your eye peeled, John, for my Google Box. I thought they'd together.
I'll have to turn Bluetooth off and put it in the stand and see if I still get the features and whatnot, because maybe it's Bluetooth, but I think it's NFC. I think it would make more sense.
But if it's I guess it all could be stored on the phone. Any per stand settings could just be stored on the phone. That makes sense. I have to say, I think this is going to be my daily driver going forward. And I have the Note 9 and the S9. And
by daily driver, is that your phone?
Yes. That's what we YouTubers call our phone.
I was
phone.
Like, what does that mean?
Our daily, the phone we use every day.
Once every couple of weeks on our podcast, the IoT podcast, I have to tell her, this is how the kids say it.
The kids.
It's the daily
driver.
You
start your show, Stacey. You got to start your show. Hi, guys. Stacey, get bothering you. That's normal. So Google has decided to play hardball with the EU. Wow. I'd be very curious what you all think about this. Remember, the European Commission's decided that Google was competing inappropriately in the EU. Fined them, $5 billion. Google's appealing that fine. But Google said, we've been working, this is Hiroshi Lockheimer of Android talking, we've been working on how to comply with the decision. We now have informed the European Commission of the changes we'll make while the appeal is pending. First, we're updating the compatibility agreements with mobile device makers that say how Android's used. Going forward, Android partners wishing to distribute Google apps may also build non-compatible or forked smartphones and tablets for the European Economic Area. That was one bone of contention. Google said, if you want to put our apps on there, which customers want, you can't make an alternative Android AOSP version of your phone. You have to either be a Google Apps device maker or not. I think the argument for that is it's confusing to consumers. They want to, you know, consumers say is buying a phone. They want to know if they're going to get the Google experience or not.
And it's not just an alternate version of a particular phone. If you sign the arrangement and license the Google Play Store, mobile services and apps, you can't make any non-Google devices.
Oh, that's interesting. You can't make any non-Android. You can't make a Tizen device or something like that.
No. You can do, I think you can do Tizen. You can't do
Android. Android, you can't use AOSP open any other way.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's AOSP Android or Google Android, as I would say.
Yes.
If you do Google Android, you cannot make any non-Google Android devices. Mm-hmm. And somebody actually tried that. It was Acer or ASUS, and the product was launched and quickly squashed.
Yeah. Well, that's changed. So, and that was one of the things the Competition Commission didn't like. And Google says now, if you're an Android partner and you want to have a Google phone, you can also build non-compatible phones or forked smartphones. For, and that by the way, means, notice that's for the European Economic Area only.
Right.
Right.
That also means theoretically Amazon could make Google devices.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. But here's where they're playing a little hardball. Device manufacturers will be able to license the Google mobile application suite separately from the Google Search app or the Chrome browser. Since the pre-installation of Search and Chrome together with our other apps used to help us fund the development and free distribution of Android, we're going to make you pay. We're going to introduce a new paid licensing agreement. Android is free and open source, but if you want the Google apps and you're in the EU, you're going to pay a fee now.
And this is for the companies who are building this, not for consumers.
But the companies pass it along, so it means a more expensive phone, I think. What's unclear is what the fee will be. But what is very clear is this is Google saying, all right, EU, we'll show you, we'll comply, but it's going to cost you. And it's going to, most importantly, it's going to cost EU consumers.
Or will it?
Right.
I only say that because the details are not here, and I've been hearing some back chatter that companies such as a Samsung or Nokia or whoever for EU phones, yes, they'll pay Google to license it, but then Google would actually give them some incentive back. So it may just be an accounting wash. I don't know. I'm very curious to see the details of all that.
Well, that was part of the problem, was that Google was apparently paying some companies to use Google apps.
Oh,
but you know what? This happens all the time. And I, you know, worked in the cable industry. I'm familiar with this with tech TV. You know, in theory, the way cable television works is the cable, you know, the individual cable companies, you know, your Austin Cable pays tech TV for the right to carry that programming. But the way tech TV gets on Austin Cable is by going to them with a bag of money saying, I mean, between you and me, we're paying you to take our channel for the first 5 years, and then you could start paying us per subscriber. But what they call it is co-marketing dollars.
Mm-hmm.
They say, this is money to help you advertise the fact that you have tech TV now. Don't worry about spending it all on billboards. Whatever you deem necessary is sufficient. And so we would pay them, and then 5 years later, the contract flips, and they start paying us, which is why it costs. And it's, you know, I remember when I was the third employee of CNET back in the early 90s, and maybe the fourth. It was the third or the fourth. And I was charged with, at the time, Halsey Miner and Shelby Bonney wanted to start a television network, not a website. And they said, but we want to know how much that's going to cost. So I did some due diligence for them as my first task. And I said, guys, it's going to cost you about $50 million a year. And it's going to take you, CNN took 10 years to turn it around. It's going to take you at least 5 years. So you need a war chest of $250 million to start a cable channel. And that's roughly, I think, what Paul Allen spent, the late Paul Allen, who has a tip of the hat, passed away this week. When he put Tech TV out there, he lost hundreds of millions of dollars because it hadn't turned yet.
Which is why the internet is so amazing.
Yes. I don't have to pay anybody. The irony is more people can watch this show than ever could watch a Tech TV show by a factor of 100. Literally. And I didn't have to pay anybody anything. I shouldn't lie.
You have to pay cash fly.
Cash fly. Yeah, we have distribution costs, but I don't have to pay your right. And by the way, this is where net neutrality does impact us. I don't have to pay your internet service provider for access to you. There, since many internet service providers are former cable companies like Comcast and AT&T and Verizon, they're kind of used to the model of us coming with bags of cash. They wish we would.
Right. Who wouldn't want a bag of cash?
What a tangled web we weave. Anyway, do you think this is Google? It really feels like a schoolboy thing. Like, well, if you're going to make me do that, I'm going to charge you. Yeah. Or is this legitimately, well, they need to recoup the expense of developing Android?
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. We know that, 80, 90% of their revenue comes from ads. And if they don't have their search engine and their browser and their Play Store on particular phones, they can't make money from ads. So I think it's legitimate to license. I don't have a problem with it. I'm more concerned from a consumer standpoint and not cost. If I'm a consumer in the EU and I want a phone, and let's say I get the non-Googleized version of it, but then later I want to add the Play Store, can I do that? Can I pay Google? Can I what? Or am I just stuck? I suspect I'm stuck.
The chat room has told me that this in psychology is called reactance. An unpleasant motivational arousal to offers, persons, rules, or regulations that threaten or eliminate specific behavioral freedoms. Reactance occurs when a person feels that someone is taking away their choices or limiting the range of alternatives. And that's how reverse psychology works, because if you want somebody to do something, you tell them, don't do that, and then reactance kicks in. Who knew Google was acting like a 10-year-old?
Oh, aren't they 20? Come on, Google.
Stop the adolescence. Google, Paul Thurrott pointed this out on Windows Weekly earlier. They already got what they wanted with Android, which is complete dominance, and they killed any other third-party operating system. It's iOS or Android, and that's that. So,
and this is, I will say, this is what the regulators did ask for, and now if you're like, oh, I don't want to pay Google this, then maybe you build your own stuff that competes with Google. I don't know. Is this ideal? And a lot of in the new era of internet kind of hegemony, a lot of the thinking about competition law is actually going to cause maybe some pain for consumers in terms of higher prices. So that's another, like in Europe, which has a very different kind of monopolistic viewpoint than in the US, that's actually what they're after. So I don't know. And the Europeans may be okay with it.
Well, they should be happy, because today if you go buy, say, a Samsung phone, just, I'm not picking on Samsung, just using them as an example, you get the Google stuff, you get your Gmail account, an app rather, because you have to, but you also have Samsung's email. You have the Google calendar. You also have Samsung calendar. There's a lot of duplication, and that's not good for consumers. But again, will they have?
They would
the
argue
freedom
that
to
it is good for consumers.
It's good to have two email apps.
Oh, not loaded on your phone necessarily, not like bloatware, but the option of having
choice.
Two different email. Yeah, choice is good.
And I'm all for choice. Absolutely, I don't have a problem with it. Okay. My point is, Samsung felt. Samsung wants to develop its own apps, but it's also a required to put Google's apps on its phone. So that's why there's duplication. It's a bad consumer experience, is my point. So that's a good thing to get rid of that, just have one or the other or choice. But in a sense, If you buy a Samsung phone that's not Google licensed, you're not going to have that choice. I mean, you're not going to have the choice of Gmail anyway. You'll have your choice of any other email app, including Samsung's. Mm-hmm. And that's an issue because really, what other good app stores are there? Samsung has an app store, yes. Amazon has an app store. But there's a lot of moving parts here that I just don't know. You know, everybody says, oh, you just sideload Google this. And yes, I can do that. And probably the people who watch the show can do that. That's not a mainstream consumer answer, though.
No.
It's also
not illegal. Is that, you see that all the time when you put a new ROM on there or whatever. The ROMs don't come with the Google apps, but you have a sideload of G apps and you install it. Is that legal? How does Google feel about that? I've always wondered.
They probably don't care, Leo, because they're getting what they want anyway. They're getting more users and data, so they don't care. Maybe they will care now that this goes into effect.
They'll care if Samsung now says, well, we're not going to, you know, Samsung's not going to come with the Google apps, but here's where you get them. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Right.
That is not going to be how that plays out.
And also, again, a lot of moving parts here. Google Play Services is a big piece of all these apps and services. And
right.
Google's not giving that away for free.
You can't download that either, right?
Used to be able to. And if you get away from the actual Google Play Store, and I'm not saying it's the best place in the world because it's not, but if you get away from it, you start losing the security it offers through Google Play Protect, where they do the machine learning scanning and on-device scanning. So are you opening yourself up to more malware and whatnot? I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts here.
I certainly don't recommend. I mean, honestly, I just tell people I guess the Samsung phones are right. I like some of the Samsung phones. But when people I care about ask me what Android phone to get, I always say just get a Pixel, period. No second choice because you know you're going to get all the Google updates. It's going to be clean. It's not going to have – I mean, I like the Samsung hardware. If Samsung – we've said this before. If Samsung did their Google Experience phones again where they just put plain Android on there, mm-hmm. I'd buy that in a heartbeat. But they don't, and they won't.
Sigh.
This, you know what? This is pretty. Now they're using Samsung panels. This is pretty close. This Pixel 3. This is pretty close.
It's almost a Samsung. That's what Google should sell it as.
It's practically a Samsung without all the junk. Let's take a break. We'll take a break in a second. But first. And I thank Kara Swisher for pointing me to this and all of us to this on Twitter. A very long thread by Morgan Knutson. Did you read this?
I did.
Twice.
So,
well, I don't know if I read all of it because I think he kept adding to
it's
it after.
It's long.
I waited till he finished. I read like 100-something tweets. I was like, okay.
This is the argument for, please, people, stop with the tweet storms. Just put it on Medium, would you? Please. It's a pain to read this.
Did someone unroll it yet?
No, we need something like that. So let's just describe this. Knutson is no longer at Google, hasn't been for a long time. In fact, he's had some successful startups. He's well past the Google days. But he started the tweet storm with, now that Google Plus has been shuttered, well, it's not shuttered yet, but it's in the process, I should air my dirty laundry, that's a good start, on how awful the project and exec team was. I'm still pissed about the bait and switch they pulled me by telling me I'd be working on Chrome, then putting me on this godforsaken piece of poop on day one. It gets worse from there.
It's very detailed.
It's not only so very detailed, but it's so credible. That's kind of what I want to ask you guys. It feels to me so credible. It's really changed my opinion about how well Google's organized. And he does say there's some really great teams. He mentions he worked with Andy Hertzfeld and, you know, it was just amazing. Because remember, Andy worked on Google Plus. But in general, it slams Vic Gundotra saying, you know, he was just, you know, let's see here if I can find it.
Yeah, there's is it 118?
It goes on and on and on. He's talking first about Larry Page. Google Plus was situated. Remember, this was when Google was all in on social. Google Plus was situated in the main building, 1900, a floor away from Larry's office, Larry Page, CEO. If you were one of the 12,000 people at Google in Mountain View who didn't work on Plus, you didn't have access to those floors. The CEO, Larry Page, didn't just have an office. The entire floor was his. We all had access to it and were encouraged to use it sparingly. A war room here and there. We had access to Larry's cafe, too, a super fancy vegan cafe called Cloud that wouldn't be sustainable in the real world. Why this exclusivity? What made Google Plus so special? Why was it held so closely to Google's chest? I'd find out later that the senior vice president of Plus used his clout to swing all of this. His name was Vic Gundotra. Now, Vic has since left, and that's really, you know, the timing of Vic's departure is really kind of coincident with this decline and fall of Google Plus. Gundotra was relatively charismatic. I remember him frequently flirting with the women on the team. Gave me a compounded, horrible impression of him. My desk was directly next to Vic's glass-walled office. He'd walk by my desk dozens of times during the day. He'd see my screen from his desk during the 8 months I was there, culminating in me leading the redesign of his product. Vic didn't say a word to me. No hello, no goodbye, no thanks for staying late, no handshake, no eye contact. Vic's product vision was fear-based. Google built the knowledge base, knowledge graph. Facebook swooped in and built the social graph. If we don't own the social graph, we can't claim to have indexed all the world's data, which, you know, that did make sense at the time. Vic was powerful at Google. He had buy-in from the top, and he wielded that stick aggressively. He made Plus as pervasive as he could. Each product org, that's every product through Google, had a mandate to integrate Google Plus's social features. If your team, say on Gmail or Android, had to integrate Google's Plus features, then your team would be awarded a 1.5 to 3 times multiplier on top of your yearly bonus, making it, you know, almost half of your entire salary. Oh, it goes on and on and on. It's kind of hard to follow because after you get to the end of one thread, you have to then click on it and go on to the... You read that correctly. A ton of money to ruin the product you were building with bloated garbage no one wanted. No one really liked this, but people drank the Kool-Aid mostly because it was green and made of paper. This made Plus the center of the Google universe and made Vic feel invincible, I presume. Once I had to hold back laughter after he announced his brilliant idea to redesign the product from the ground up every 6 months. It goes on. I recommend reading it. Morgan Knutson, Morgan Knutson. My takeaway was how disorganized Google was, how petty politics had influenced it to the point where people weren't doing their best work. They were often assigned projects they didn't have the capability of handling. It's not a pleasant picture at all. What do you guys think? What do you think, Stacey?
I think it shows that Google is like every other crappy big company out there. Yeah. And like they used to have a lock on this idea that they were this idealistic group. And I think some of that halo effect still lives. But I mean, we know that Google's not trying not to be evil. We know that there's a gajillion people there. And, you know, I think if anything, this shows how a halo effect from your early culture can really help you. The flip side of that, look at companies like Uber now and how they behave and how long is that effect, even if they're not crazy jerks in the world, how long is that going to stick with them?
Yeah.
So can I tie to this the story from the New Yorker, by the way? Because sure. I don't know if you saw that. So this was in the New Yorker. It's about Waymo. And I think it was yesterday or maybe the day before that we pulled this up, or someone pulled this up. But it's talking about an argument between Lewandowski and his colleague at Google, where it describes Lewandowski pulling the software and allowing it to self-driving car software, allowing it to take forbidden routes and then basically driving a Camry off the road. So if you do a fine for the word Camry, and then they didn't report this. It doesn't look like they reported it. And it screwed up his colleague's back so badly, this particular accident, that he had to get like surgery.
One day in 2011, a Google executive named Isaac Taylor learned that while he was on paternity leave, Lewandowski had modified the Camry software so that he could take them, actually all the car software, so that he could take them on otherwise forbidden routes. A Google executive recalls witnessing Taylor and Lewandowski shouting at each other. Lewandowski told Taylor the only way to show him why his approach was necessary was to take a ride together. Both Both men, still furious, jumped into a self-driving Prius and headed off. The car went onto a freeway where it traveled past an on-ramp. According to people with knowledge of events that day, the Prius accidentally boxed in another vehicle, a Camry. A human driver could easily have handled the situation by slowing down and letting the Camry merge into traffic, but Google's software wasn't prepared for this scenario. The cars continued speeding down the freeway side by side. The Camry's driver jerked his car into the right shoulder, then apparently trying to avoid a guardrail, he veered to the left. The Camry pinwheeled across the freeway and into the medium. Lewandowski was acting as a safety driver, swerved hard to avoid colliding with the Camry, and caused Taylor to injure his spine so severely he eventually required multiple surgeries. They didn't go back to check on the other driver to see if anyone had been hurt. Neither they nor other Google executives made inquiries with the authorities. The police were not informed that a self-driving algorithm had contributed to the accident. Basically, it was a hit and run.
Yeah, and then he's like, oh, instead of being upset about this happening, which I think would be horrifying, he's like, yeah, that's valuable data that we now have.
And he sent out an email with video of the collision, subject line Prius versus Camry.
Yeah, so...
he was proud of it.
This is not a culture that we want doing really anything. Yeah. And this is,
wow.
I mean, yeah, so it ties into nothing that this thread had in it surprises me. It's basically like a bunch of frat bros, like, who have the engineering capabilities to be oblivious to the rest of the world. I don't even know. It like fits all the terrible stereotypes that you have.
In response to questions about these incidents from the New Yorker, Google's self-driving unit disputed that its cars are unsafe. Safety is our highest priority, a spokesperson wrote to the author. The company said in the case of this collision, a report was submitted to the authorities. And even though multiple participants later sought medical care, quote, every person involved left the scene on their own accord. Or Camry. As for the Camry incident, the person described it as, oh, this is a different incident. I'm sorry, the kit collision. In the Camry case, the spokesperson said, well, it was, quote, an unfortunate single car accident in which another car failed to yield to traffic. And because Google's self-driving car didn't hit the Camry, Google did not cause the incident.
That's like insurance speak, but
yeah,
the police totally would. Actually, maybe they wouldn't cite you for... No, they would still cite you. They'd cite you for reckless driving, though.
It does raise the question, which the New Yorker also raises, that if Google's not reporting that because the self-driving car didn't hit anything, then there may be many other accidents we don't know about that are not reported as accidents but may have been caused by behavior by the self-driving car. A spokesperson for Google declined to discuss the company's reporting policies.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to discuss that either.
Charles Duhigg writing in the New Yorker. New Yorker's been doing such great investigative reporting lately. They've really done a great job.
As bad as
both of those stories are, Stacey, I think you hit the nail on the head in the beginning about the engineering and the ability to do things that other companies and people aren't doing. But I can say with certainty from experience, not everybody is like that at Google. I hate to see them all lumped in as frat boys.
No, I think that's even in this tweet storm, he's very clear about that.
Yes. Yes.
I think it's a function of who's in charge in not just at Google, but there is a culture in Silicon Valley that we all recognize. I feel most of us recognize. It's kind of the move fast and break things taken to maybe the unempathetic extreme. If we want to call it. And so that's kind of what I'm talking about. And
sure.
Morgan, this is something that bedeviled Microsoft for years, the product fiefdoms and exerting their power. And he is an example in this tweet storm. He says he was working with WebRTC and he figured out a way to integrate Google's, create a sidebar that integrated with other apps into the sidebar, so you could have your Gmail, your calendar, your Plus all in one place in a sidebar on Google Plus, for instance. He says, it's January of 2012. I'm back in the office because he worked on it during Christmas. I show it around. People seem to like it. Even Greg, his bureaucratic direct report, reluctantly liked it. Somebody, maybe him, told me I needed to talk to another guy to get buy-in on my chat plans. He was the exec that was responsible for it. I found him, and he was able to give him a quick elevator pitch on what I was going for with RTC. The executive said, "Ha, there's no way we're doing that. I/O's coming up. We've just spent the last 4 months building a Chrome extension that does something similar. If Plus has this, we're going to get laughed off the stage." I was like, well, but shouldn't all these work together in a sort of your conversations are available wherever you are kind of way? Nope, we're not doing that. And
this explains why we have, you know, Hangouts and Duo. Yeah. And
yes.
All this.
From the outside, people looking in now kind of can say, oh, I get it. That's what killed, by the way, was terrible at Microsoft. It's a real problem at Microsoft.
I do think that when you are a company with, and Google has almost 90,000 employees now, I think.
There's going to be fiefdoms. There's going to be politics.
Yep. You're going to have politics, but it is also very difficult given how many people in different product teams and all the types of products that you're pulling in together at Google.
Yeah.
It's hard to build that. And well, make that work.
Satya Nadella came in, and I think he kind of solved it at Microsoft by changing the reporting structure and changing the executive to make it more horizontal and vertical. There's ways to, if you know it's a problem, you can address it.
Maybe Sundar is trying.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. It's always a problem with a giant corporation. You've got all sorts of, you've got the innovator's dilemma, you've got organizational issues. It's a hard thing to do.
It's unclear what their core product is. This is across all tech companies, right? You're starting to see, like, it is hard to say, I guess, all what arrows you put your wood behind, right? If you're making a widget or several widgets, it's very easy. But like, if you're on the AI team, are you really optimizing for AI, or are you optimizing your AI for five different Google products?
Right.
And that's very different.
It's hard. I absolutely agree. And the only reason this is of interest is because, for me anyway, Google has a very shiny reputation as being smarter than everybody else and being above these problems, which other corporations have.
Mm. Right. That's the halo that I think they probably no longer deserve.
No, they probably never did. Right.
I don't know. And there is still, and you still see it in some of the things Google puts out in the world. You're like, Google, that is brilliant, but you are explaining this horribly.
Right.
And come on, man.
I also think that it's helpful because it helps me understand exactly, as you said, why the messages mess is going on, why stuff doesn't work better together. You know, when Jeff says, why can't my G Suite login work with these things as well as my consumer login? It's not necessarily that it's such a hard problem. It's just that those are different fiefdoms and you can't get them to work together and things like that.
Yeah, it's definitely not always a technical problem. And Google's good at solving the technical problems.
Yeah.
But when it's something outside of that, it gets challenging.
Yeah, Google's not alone here, by the way. Apple's lost some of its luster as well. It's hard to be what we think these companies are. Maybe we put them on a pedestal and we shouldn't. Almost certainly we shouldn't. well worth reading anyway. It's, you know, whether, believe it or not, you know, whatever your take is on it, it's a very interesting tweet storm. And I guess I just wish people would stop putting that stuff on Twitter and put it in one place where you can read it and comment on it, right? And you know,
there are lots of comments on the
tweet
store.
But they're all over the place. They're all over the place. They're on each different tweet. It's not practical. I'll never understand why people do that. Why? In fact, explain it to me. Why do people do that, Morgan? Why?
Probably it starts out as a stream of consciousness thing.
It starts as one or two tweets, and it gets
out
of
hand.
Yeah,
then you just get in, and then you're there. So why would you change it? And
he did it over a couple of days, too. I mean, he walked away and came back, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Somebody has put it in Thread Reader. And thank you to PS Chops in our chat room. So I guess Thread Reader is a site that will do this, put all these threads together. However, if I were to read you the link, you would probably not find it any easier to find. It's threadreaderapp.com/thread/10495230675069. 66529.html. You can thank me later. Look how long it is.
It's a novella.
It's a novella.
It's yeah, I can't believe I spent that much time reading it.
Are you glad you read it or not?
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely. I mean, I always like inside stories of any company just because it's also kind of therapeutic. You're like, oh, my crappy work experience was no different than this other crappy work experience.
Yes.
I don't. You're nice. It's nice.
We should just mention Morgan went on to, he left Google to go to Dropbox, where he said it was a pleasant experience. These people weren't mired in BS and politics. They were at the top of their games. I was so stoked to interview.
Well, that happens. I mean, smaller companies, you can usually see that like right away.
Yeah. And so he went to Dropbox. He later started a Shift app to buy or sell a used car, which raised $140 million in a Series D. He's currently working on another startup. And then it ends. He said, I sent a resignation email to Greg. He forwarded it to HR within seconds. I sent an email to the company saying goodbye, standard practice. I got hundreds of heartfelt replies from Google employees. Felt great and terrible at the same time. On my way out, Greg tried to chit-chat and shake my hand. It took everything in me not to tell him to go F himself. I walked past his extended hand and said, nah, man. He said, really? I turned around and looked him in the eye as I backed out of the door. Yeah, really. The end.
It was very well written. I enjoyed it. I'm telling you, I read it two times.
He's picturing this as a screenplay. That's what's happening.
It was very well written.
Mm-hmm.
Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. With all the recent news about security breaches online, it's hard not to worry what's happening to your data as it floats over the Wi-Fi or local coffee shop or hotel, or even through your internet service provider's portals. It'd be nice, wouldn't it, to avoid being tracked online by social media sites and marketing companies? Your mobile or internet service provider to be impervious to hacking, not to have your information sold to the highest bidder. Take back your privacy. Use ExpressVPN, the number one VPN service, according to Tech Radar. Number one. I know you're looking for a good VPN. I know you know how VPNs work. The nice thing about ExpressVPN, it's got apps for every platform. They run in the background. It's one click to turn on the VPN and secure and anonymize your traffic and hide your IP address. You could surf safely on public Wi-Fi. You could even at home without being snooped on or having your personal data stolen. And it's less than $7 a month with a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you don't want to hand over your online history to your internet provider or data resellers, if you don't want to be vulnerable to attacks on open Wi-Fi, ExpressVPN is the answer. ExpressVPN. And read their privacy policy. You'll feel good about it. You'll know you're secure. Not every VPN is that private. In fact, most aren't. ExpressVPN is really awesome. Protect your online activity today. Find out how you can get an additional 3 months free with a 1-year package at expressvpn.com/twig. ExpressVPN.com/twig. An additional 3 months when you sign up for a year. ExpressVPN.com/TWIG. Your online activity is your business. Period. Actually, to that point, DuckDuckGo is saying they've seen a 30% increase in searches over the last year.
Oh, wow. You know, a year ago I was using DuckDuckGo, but I kind of stopped.
I think your story is pretty common.
yep.
DuckDuckGo is an interesting search engine. I think it's decent, right? You can, on all browsers, you can make it your default search engine. But I mean, most people still use Google.
Stacey, why do you no longer use it?
I think I like switched a device or something that I had it as a default, and then I had to switch or loaded something on that turned the default off, basically, and then I didn't put it back.
Yeah.
And sometimes every now and then I would check to see if like Google was better. And sometimes it was. As a journalist, I really do need
That's the problem, you know. You can believe in privacy. You can say, I don't like Google and all that. But ultimately, a good search engine's worth its weight in gold. Here's the traffic, though, on DuckDuckGo over. This is from January 2011 to January 2019. You can see it's a steep increase.
Wait, 2018?
2019.
January 2019.
Oh, I guess we haven't gotten there yet, but that's the blank part at the end of the...
Oh, okay. I was like, no, Leo.
There's a little blank part at the end of the graph. See, it says 20... You know why? I don't know. You know, just because for completeness
sake.
We're
almost there.
We're almost there. God, yeah. That's amazing, isn't it?
I'm seeing them show up a lot more in my own site stats for referrals lately.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I mean, a highly technically literate audience is going to be the driver.
Yeah.
And I remember when I started pitching Google to my friends way back, I had a friend who...
What's wrong with Alta Vista, Stacey?
Yeah, she was like, I don't know if you remember this, but you turned me on to Google way back in... And I was like, holy cow.
See,
I think it was like
smart
2000.
You are?
Yeah, so she was like, I always thought you were awesome after that.
Oh.
I was like... Yeah.
Yeah, I am. You're right. Super awesome. Do you have a Google Home Hub yet, Kevin?
I do not. I don't know that anybody does.
Okay. Yeah, I ordered one, but it hasn't come yet.
Yeah, people ordered it. I don't know if we're going to order it.
I don't want one.
You don't want
one? He doesn't want one.
Why not?
No. I don't.
Because it's too small for my use. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad product.
It's tiny, isn't it? It's not. Oh, it's deceptive. You think it's going to be.
It's only bigger than a smartphone. I mean, it's 7-inch diagonal. You can hold it in your hand like you could the base of it, like a Amazon Echo or a Dot, really.
Here's Ron Amadio covering the entire screen with, it looks like, his Note 9.
Right.
That's how big it is.
It's very small. And a lot of the features that are on it are coming to the Lenovo Smart Display that I already have, which is a 10-inch display. I prefer that because I like watching content on it. So why do I want that from Google? I just don't, you know.
It's not the same technology. So apparently Google created something called Android Things. You guys are aware of that, I'm sure. Mm. And that's what the Lenovo runs on, the JBL, the LG. But Google, for some reason, when they decided to do their own, decided not to use Android Things, but instead to use... something Ron says a lot closer to Chromecast.
And he does give a really good explanation for this, which is cutting costs.
Cheap. It is cheap. At $150 bucks, it's by far the cheapest thing out there.
So he explains that the chipset that they used is not compatible with Android Things because it doesn't have enough memory. And it's true. Android Things is freaking huge for an IoT device. And Kevin and I have talked about that for years. So it makes sense, but it is a little weird, and it kind of shows how stupid or bifurcated or weird that Google's IoT strategy is.
Yeah, we can now understand this better, can't we?
Yeah, now we're like, back to that. Google doesn't know what the right or left or any hands are doing.
Yeah. It doesn't have a camera, which I thought was really interesting after the Facebook portal announcement. By the way, Facebook, at the time they announced this portal, said, oh, don't worry, we're not going to spy on you. We're not going to use anything we gather from it for advertising. And now they said, oh, no, actually we are.
Just kidding.
At least they did it before you actually could get a device.
Yeah, although I ordered it. I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
Oh, no. Don't even accept delivery.
Leo,
no, I have to. I don't plan. It's not. I didn't order it for me. I ordered it for you. I ordered it so we can review it.
Yeah, we don't want it.
No, I don't want it either. I don't know what I'm going to do with it afterwards. Put it in a nuclear waste dump. I don't know.
I was going to say, don't burn it, but you could recycle it. Never. How is it built for recycling? I wonder.
Well,
that's actually a question that I've started asking a lot of companies devices.
That's right.
Because I think everything's so throwaway now. That's kind of a non sequitur, but throwing it out there.
It's not a non sequitur. It's absolutely. In fact, that's why I always check with iFixit, and they will talk about that all the time. They're really big on the notion of recyclability, and they'll rate this stuff. And most of this stuff is not, sad to say.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah. So let me ask this then, Kevin, because you have the Lenovo. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Is it? You think it's going to be better or more functional than a Home Hub?
No, because Lenovo's. Sorry.
Go ahead, Stacey. You can answer it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead, Miss IoT. The Lenovo, go ahead.
The Lenovo is going to get all the functionality of the Home Hub.
Right. All of it? Because it was my sense that initially we reviewed the Lenovo. It lacked a lot of features that just a Google Assistant has. Right?
No. Like what?
No. Like, yeah.
We couldn't what couldn't we do? I forgot. We couldn't play back stuff.
We couldn't play Netflix, Netflix isn't on a normal Google Assistant either.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I mean, like a Google Home?
Yeah. But since there's only one family of displays, right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got I'll have to go back and look at our review. I didn't review it. I think Jason or Megan did. But I got the feeling that it wasn't as complete as a product from Google would be.
Well, nah, I think the Home Hub is less. Okay, I'm letting Kevin answer because I'm so sorry. Go, Kevin.
Well, I have the smart display.
Oh. But
okay. Yeah, that's right. She doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, I bought hers and had it shipped to her.
I paid you back.
You paid me back.
Aww.
I mean, hey, $50 off at Costco. She got a deal.
You guys are so cute.
We shop together. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But the smart display, it's supposed to get the pull down gesture that brings the Home Hub information center where you see all of your devices and so on. So that's not unique to the Google Home Hub. That's coming to the other devices, they said. It's a Chromecast receiver. Both of them are, so I can pipe anything I want that I can Chromecast to it or to the Google Home Hub. But I wouldn't do that on the 7-inch when I can do it on a 10-inch 1080p display. I don't really see the benefit of having other than lower cost.
Okay, see. Oh, no. I was going to say, don't they have a brightness sensor that's different for this one? That was the only thing Kevin and I...
That's worth it.
And yes, wait a minute. But also the photo slideshow. Can you do that Google Photos slideshow on a Lenovo?
Oh, yeah. I do it all the time. Oh. All day long, mine shows pictures.
Because really, that's half of what this is a digital pixel frame, a picture frame, right?
Kevin, because it's always on. Shoot with me? Because where is Google pulling that information from? And this is actually useful for anybody because they
know everything, don't they?
My Google Home, it only pulls from two options for my slideshows, and they're crappy options. It doesn't pull from all of my Google Photos.
So right off the bat, the live photos that they touted with this new Google Home Hub, where it automatically adds pictures of a person or pet. That's not even available yet. So we don't have that on the Lenovo, and Google Home Hub doesn't have it either. But you should be able to do it in your Google Home app, because that's where I did it, because I just have an album of Norm just going all day long when I want, and then I switch it to pictures of Earth, you know, and whatnot. So it should be in the Home app, Safe.
So I have it in the Home app, and it says, hey, we'll pull it from Google Photos on the Google account that I use for most of my personal photos. Okay. But it only shows me two options, like two slideshow or two album options. So,
well, how many albums do you have on Google Photos?
Like,
I'm getting a guess. What? Maybe they're sets of private or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, maybe. Okay. Anyway, this is what I was doing yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I have other options, so I'm guessing maybe they're set to private or something.
So would you recommend that people spend $50 more for the Lenovo 8-inch or $100 more for the 10-inch?
It depends on the use case. If you just want a smart hub control where everything is aggregated, all your devices, and you get the Google Assistant, and occasionally you might watch some video or something, no, spend $150 and get the Google Home Hub. It's cheap. But if you want to maybe do duo calls, I'm not saying people do, but if you do,
Facebook portal for that.
Good luck. Don't call me on that. but you know, if you want to watch, you know, YouTube TV or YouTube videos or whatever it is that you want to Chromecast to it, I enjoy the experience better on a larger display. So for me, it was worth at Costco the extra $50 to get the 10-inch. Lenovo smart display because they were selling it for $199.
I can't figure out how to unorder the Facebook portal. That's my problem. If I could, I would.
Once you're in, you're in.
You're in.
Yeah.
And it's really sad because I had to reactivate my Facebook account just to order it. Ugh. Ugh.
That you know that that was I hate that anyway.
I blew it. I really blew it.
You blew it. Leo. Oh.
Well, somebody in the chat room pointed out, you don't have to review this. No one else is going to buy it.
Only the media people are going to buy
it. And, not only that, I bought the $350 10-inch, 15-inch one. That's really silly.
I mean, honestly, even if it was the most amazing camera interface, most seamless, I would still be pissed at anyone who recommended it to people.
Yeah.
Because you can't, we can no longer evaluate devices without understanding the privacy implications.
That's a good point. We're not just reviewing the hardware here.
Yeah. And I think we need to, in the media, get on that train and stay on it. So that's
Michael in our chat room says, review it, autograph it, sell it on eBay for charity. But nobody will buy it. I think what I'm going to use it, I'm going to put it in the front door. It'll scare people away. People, bad guys go, oh, no, he's got the good Facebook portal. Get out of here.
Oh, my God. It's linking me right down to my Facebook account.
Oh, no.
I'm going to get a Roomba and have it go around the house. Scare the kids at Halloween.
That's a good idea. I could do that. Facebook, of course, says, hey, good news. We mentioned maybe as many as 90 million people were hacked. We've done an investigation. It's only 30 million people. Good news. 29 million, something like that. Good news. It's amazing that something could be a company could be so big that 30. This means 30 million Facebook users had their account hijacked with this flaw, without their knowledge. And that they could say, hey, it's less than we thought. It's not so bad. 30 million.
They did think, didn't they originally think it was 50 million?
90. There was 50, 90. And then there was another 40, and they thought maybe it could be as many as 90. It's only 30. Good news.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really, you know what, if this thing comes, I'm just slapping a return label on it and sending it back. I'm sorry. I'm not going to review it. You're right. I was nuts to even think it. It's a moment of weakness.
Wait, I can make you stop delivery on a Facebook portal, but I can't make you order a Rodimatic? I just don't understand you,
wish,
Leo.
That's an interesting point. Because I bought two of these for almost $700. I mean, you do get $100 off when you buy two. So how much is a Rodimatic?
It's 1,000.
Yeah, that's.
Hey, you know, they offered 10% me a review off. Unit. I could send it to you.
No, I don't do review units because what if I get hooked on the Rodimatic? Then I have to send
it
back.
Then you have to send it back.
Oh, actually, that's a good point.
Yeah. That's what you do.
I bought Heston Q Bluetooth enabled burner and pots that you recommended.
I did not recommend those. In fact, I told you shouldn't have bought them.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I just thought that was kind of silly.
It was Alex Lindsay who said I should buy them.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, it wasn't me, Leo.
I'm so ambivalent about it. They've been sitting in the back of my car. I've been driving around with them for a week, unopened.
Well, you do. Once you've bought it, you should probably at least try it. Maybe you'll think differently.
At least this doesn't spy on my eating habits, or does it?
It counts how many it doesn't spy on yours personally. Oh, wait, I heard the Heston Q?
Well, what is the Rodis? We know the Rodimatic spies because it says how many Rodis have been made.
Well, yeah, it does know, but it doesn't individually.
It says on its very front page of its website how many Rodis have been made by Rodimatic.
Well, that's like a million more than last week.
It's going up.
Go Rodis.
It was 29 million and something last week.
Every second, another Rodi is made by the Rodimatic. 30,244,199 Rodis have been made by the world's most popular food robot.
Yeah.
It's a small category.
It is.
We're number one.
I don't believe the Heston. So it's tracking metrics from the pan for both diagnostic and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if it's individually capturing and keeping what you cook. It may grab that and anonymize it, but it may not. Like the June gives you the option of doing some
I have to say Lisa's already frustrated with the June, and she says we're swapping it, we're going to bring it to work, and swap it back in our old manual toaster oven because it's too hard. It's just, all she wants to do is make toast, and it takes three button presses.
Oh, yeah, they did. So they do add the – they say, hey, is it toast? You're like, yes. And then it's like
– and then put your every single time it says put your rack in the middle. It's in the middle. I haven't moved it since I made toast yesterday. And every single time. And then after it's done and plays this little tune, it says, do you want to toast some more or do you want to stop now?
Yeah, but you don't have to actually. It'll stop automatically after time. When you pull your toast out and let it shut, it'll leave that up there. And then eventually it's like, oh.
I know, but it feels neglected. If it's just sitting there. It's like asking into space. Fine. Do you want me to toast some more? I'll toast some more. You want me to? Anybody? Anybody?
Nah.
So, you just got toasted.
I know.
Did you see that?
I know. Kevin. Kevin on the board. He's running the board. He's Mr.
Good
Toaster.
Job.
He's good. No, he's good. Hackers stole millions of Facebook users' highly sensitive data. We mentioned that. And the FBI has asked it not to say who might be behind it. This is Rob Price writing for Business Insider. Facebook says the FBI has said, please don't say who is behind this hack. What the hell? What does that mean?
The government told me not to tell you. That's awesome.
We're cooperating with the FBI, says Facebook. Facebook executive Guy Rosen.
So it was the government.
Yeah, which is actively investigating and has asked us not to discuss who may be behind this attack. Well, that really raises a question.
You know what question it raises for me?
What?
Is, well, if the FBI tells people not to talk about stuff and you can say that, what the heck is happening with that Bloomberg story, man?
I'm with Bloomberg.
You're with Bloomberg. Okay.
We had Mark Millian in from Bloomberg Business Week on Sunday on Twit, and I gave him the fifth. He knows, is it Jordan Richardson? He knows Jordan. He worked across the desk from me. He says, very good security reporter. He says he knows all the technical details, but this was a general audience article, so it's not laden with the technical details, but you could ask him. He would tell you. He says they were working on this since the Obama administration. It's been a 2-year process, heavily vetted by management, by their editor in chief. They really worked on it, and I think, you know, he says it's absolutely credible, and I think we're going to see more evidence that it's credible. There's just no way somebody like Bloomberg Businessweek puts this on their cover of their magazine unless they're 100% certain. Jordan Robertson, I should say. And Michael Riley, the authors of this. No, I think it's completely credible. And again, as we said last week, the issue isn't from our point of view, well, who did what when, but that this happens all the time. We know it happens. We do it. They do it. It happens in the supply chain. It happens during, you know, shipping. And it's very hard to fix because we don't want to make stuff in the United States anymore.
Yep. Whew. Okay. Where are we?
Yeah, Amazon unveils. This is a little, we're going to throw you a little IoT bone here.
Ooh.
Amazon unveils 3 new APIs that send camera data from smart cameras and doorbells to Echo devices. Makes it easier for Amazon developers to tap into connected security cameras and doorbells. It's the Doorbell Event Source API, the Motion Sensor API, and the Alexa RTC session controller. And it doesn't have to be an Amazon bit of hardware. Third-party smart home apps.
We have been waiting for this for a while. Like, even Ring, after they were bought by Amazon, were still waiting for this.
Yeah.
So,
will it be just for Rings, or will it be for everything?
If it's an API, API, right? Anybody can use it. Now, the question is, who's going to actually build for it? So, the biggest, like... August actually built something custom that's a little bit different to put their stuff in.
Amazon says both Ring and August support Doorbell Event Source and Motion Sensor. So August, which is not an Amazon device, does already.
And Arlo has supported, I've been able to look at my Arlos on my Arlo cameras by Netgear on my Echo for a while. So they're either using it or they're going to port to using this.
So what does this mean for end users? Give me a use case.
If someone wants to, if a company wants to implement this, you'll be able to see your camera feeds on your Echo Show or your Echo Spot. Or is there another device with a screen?
No. So,
maybe I
Or your TV, because there are a lot of Echo-enabled TVs now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't know if it... I assume it would work on the Fire TV.
We have, you know, this 100-inch Hisense TV is Echo-enabled. I would love it if it would just display who's at my front door, who's at my side. You know, that would be so awesome.
The downside is, if you choose not to use it, like Nest does not make any of their camera APIs available to third parties. Uh-huh. Your Nest gear won't work. So your Dropbox and stuff won't show up there. The other thing is there's a lot of latency. Uh-huh. So it's not great for doorbells or security cameras.
Because by the time you see the picture, they've already left.
Yeah. It's taken about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Where you're like, show me this. And it's a long time when you're like, oh, the doorbell just rang.
So does this enable two-way communication as well? I think it should.
You know, my stuff had two-way communication on it, so I'm guessing. Like, I could shout through my camera with two-way audio on it through the Echo, I believe.
Yeah,
I feel like
I'm
I've
thinking
done
you'll
that
be
in the past.
You'll be able to, even if you can't see who's at the door, you could speak to your Echo and say who's there or I'll be right there or whatnot.
So you still have to establish the connection, and that's what takes time.
Yeah. Although, Leo, I don't know. Do you have a Nest Hello doorbell, Leo?
I have a Ring doorbell because Ring's the sponsor.
Sorry. Okay. Thank you for playing. But the Nest.
That works with the Google Home Hub, right?
It does, but... It gets better. It also works with this on the Pixel Stand. And
what's the latency on that? Have you noticed?
I tested it because I have an NVIDIA TV, NVIDIA Shield TV box
as
up here, which is an Android TV.
As do I.
And I have my doorbell pop up on there and it takes about 5 seconds, just like we were saying with the other products. We tested it yesterday morning at 5:30 in the morning because my wife was going to walk the dog. She hit the doorbell and it showed up here in about 1 second on my phone. But it has to be in the stand.
So I have a Shield, but I don't have the doorbell. But I do have some Nest cameras around the house.
You can see those.
I have the outdoor Nest cameras. Actually, it was really handy when that woman drove over our mailbox while we were on our last vacation.
Mm-hmm.
We were in Japan, and I'm looking, and I said, what happened to our mailbox? Because we have one of those rural route things, and it was... So I scanned back through the video, and I could see this woman, and it turned out to be the newspaper delivery lady who's driving her car. She's folding newspapers, and just watching her car just kind of veer off the road, slaughter our mailbox, and veer back.
So that's one of the things people don't think about with these cameras. I mean, it's great to see who's coming to the door and everything, but
there's lots of stuff I look at. Yeah.
Yeah. Like 6 months ago, we park our car on the street here. We're in a townhouse community. My wife went out to the car at 6 a.m. and there were pieces all over and a big dent in her car. We're like, what happened? So I went back to the Nest that's facing front. And sure enough, the night before, people from across the street hit it. I had all the footage. They claimed not to have hit it. And I'm like, there you are, pulling out of your driveway, hitting my car. So their insurance company paid for everything, including our deductible, because I had the video.
In this case, at first I was perturbed until I looked at my Ring doorbell, and I have the video of her immediately after coming, knocking on her door, coming back 3 hours later, knocking on her door, coming back 3 hours after that. She felt terrible, and I called her. She left a message, like a 30-minute message, which I didn't hear because I was in Japan. But when I got it, I called her back and said, don't worry about it. Thank you for being so honest. It's fine. We didn't like that mailbox anyway.
Well, you're very nice.
Oh, well, for crying out loud, she delivering newspapers. She probably doesn't have a lot of money to make mailboxes, right?
Right. Well, that's true.
Good
on her.
I wonder if I saved it as a clip. I wonder where that would – I could show you.
No. Don't do that to her. That's not cool.
Who needs Facebook Portal for privacy? We've got Leo's camera there.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Don't you want to see it? The chat room's going, show it. All right. I won't show it.
I mean, that was a really bad moment in her life. You know?
It was. And I felt really good when I called her up and said, oh, that's honey. That's fine. Don't worry about it. She's an older woman. And I said, you just next time try to stay on the road. Okay. I don't want you to get hurt.
Yeah, no, I appreciate, I both appreciate and kind of sad about it, you know, like.
Yeah, it's kind of, I know, because now everything's on camera.
In little things, like, you know, it's kind of fun to, like, you know, see, like, the kids getting their Halloween candy on your camera. But it's also, like, oh, kids can't go ring people's doorbells and run away anymore. I guess that's not great. But, like, remember when you toilet papered people's houses?
Yeah, no, they can't do dong and dash or whatever they call it. Here's, you can see this. You can't identify her.
Oh, okay.
There's the mailbox over here on the right. Okay. And let me speed it up a little bit. Here comes her car. See, there it is. She's driving. She's delivering the newspapers. Now she's folding the newspapers. It's actually kind of fun to have this. It's not so good that I posted it on Reddit or anything. But watch out. There's a mailbox. Oh, crap.
Whoops.
Okay. Anyway, it's not as exciting as I remember it.
It's really exciting when, you know, you're like, aha,
I got her.
What happened?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it was puzzling. Like, why is my mailbox lying on the ground? It's funny because I never had cameras. I never wanted cameras. In fact, I was always of the opinion that that kind of paranoia and lack of trust leads to people doing bad things to you. Like, if you trust, you leave your door unlocked, everything's going to be fine. And it's always been that way. But, you know, we had to test these out and try them and stuff. So I put them around and this, all the different cameras and stuff. And it's kind of cool. I have one in my office. Our 15-year-old goes around throughout the house. For a while, I've had three or four in the house. And unplugs them or knocks them over or puts them under furniture. He doesn't want any video. No video. So I honor his.
I honor that too.
Yeah.
And I thought you were going to show the video of her knocking on your door.
No, identifiable.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was like. I was
just
like,
a car hitting my mailbox and not even really, you know, just kind of sight swiping it. I think we should blow some trumpets because it's time for, you ready for this, Kevin? The Google changelog.
The Google changelog.
Helping parents have the tech talk with their kids, Google has decided that it's time for them to help parents teach their kids. It's part of October's National Cybersecurity Awareness and National Bullying Prevention Month. Kevin, we're partnering with the National PTA and DonorsChoose.org on two initiatives to help kids be safe and positive online. Our goal this year, says Google, is to reach 5 million kids with Be Internet Awesome. It's a bilingual kit in English and Spanish. It includes a Pixel book. Wait a minute. How do I sign up for this? To power the workshop, a presentation. Oh, I see. You give a workshop and you get the Pixel book, but then I guess you probably have to send it back. A presentation developed in partnership with the Family Online Safety Institute. They talk about online safety, digital citizenship. This is great. Tips and resources to create a positive digital experience. Family guides to inspire co-learning at home. Posters for the school to remind students to be internet awesome by being kids. This is the new Boy Scouts. Smart, alert, strong, kind, and brave. And a school banner as a recognition for participating in Be Internet Awesome. If you're interested in applying for one of the 200 workshop grants or a kit, visit the National PTA site, pta.org. It's in their programs section. Later this fall, says Google, we're making content from the kit available digitally for everybody on our Be Internet Awesome with Google.com website. It's kind of a long URL. Be Internet Awesome dot with Google.com.
Oof.
Play your way.
The crime dog.
Yeah.
And they get.
Take a bite at him. Yes. Bullying. Yep. Help. Be Internet Awesome. This is McGruff the crime dog saying, I'll see you later. Going behind the design of the new Chromecast, people have been now reviewing the Chromecast. As you pointed out last week, it's only 1080p, but it is 60 frames a second. It's not a massive improvement. Most of the people reviewing it say, you don't need the new Chromecast if you've got the old Chromecast. If you have a 4K, you're going to get the Chromecast Ultra anyway. But here is a conversation about details about the new Chromecast. You know what? Here's a typical exchange between the Google interviewer and the Google employee. So what sets Chromecast and made by Google products apart from other devices? It's the design language. This is the reason I wanted to join Google. We're making tech that's approachable, human-centric, and easily blends in with other things in your house. Everything to know about the Google Assistant on our new family of hardware. This is a post on the keyword by Manuel Bronstein. He's the vice president of product for Google Assistant. It's kind of an all-on-one page listing of things you can do with Assistant, like screen calls, block spam, book reservations, new accessories, how to manage them. Worth reading. It's, you know, not that long. It's shorter than that tweet storm. But it'll give you some insight if you've got one of these. Here's something Jeff would be happy. Google Plus in G Suite gets content tagging, custom streams, and more engagement and metrics. I think the Google Plus team is like that Japanese soldier who didn't know the war was over, but was living on Okinawa for years.
They're not truly shutting Google Plus down. They're turning the consumer version off.
So there is going to be a business.
For enterprise. Yes,
G-Suite
for businesses.
Version. All right.
And Jeff has G Suite. It'd be the one thing Jeff has
that
I can't sign into. Exactly.
Actually, so do they see this as an intranet thing?
We used it at Google all the time.
Yeah, they use it internally. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes it would
be for product information, updates, secret projects that aren't so secret anymore, or just communities. They had some great communities at Google.
So you can have a private Google Plus for your business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Google does. I don't know if we can, but.
Well, that's the question, right?
Yeah. It probably isn't private because I think you can invite people from outside. I don't know.
Here's, but it's not completely
going away. So
the final sentence, even though Google Plus for consumers, look how they spell consumers. It's kind of the modern spelling, no E, is being ditched. It's very much alive and kicking in the enterprise. So there. And you thought Google Plus was dead. Google Cloud.
It's basically like Slack.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. No one knows. And by the way, what business is going to invest any time at all in Google Plus? Knowing that at any moment it could follow its consumer version down the dustbin of history. Right?
Yeah. Nobody new is going to adopt it.
Yeah. Google Slack. Google Cloud adds Cloud Identity, Cloud IAP, and Secure LDAP. Next item. No, that's
all your enterprise people out there.
They're happy now. That's okay. You got the other button? The Google.
Hey, honey, I got LDAP.
I got LDAP for you. It's LDAP. It's here. That's the Google changelog. And we are going to take a little break and come back with your picks of the week. This week in Google, brought to you today by Capterra. If you're a business and you need software, you sure do. Software businesses run on software these days. Capterra is the place to go to find business software for you. And they wanted to let you know they've got a great new big book of free software, free just for you, with 2019 fast approaching. You don't have time for unexpected hurdles to derail. You find software for your business fast with Capterra's new free ebook. It's free software, the big book of free software. Over 300 different tools. It can help you find a completely free tool to test today. And the book costs nothing. Whether you're looking for a new project management tool or an email marketing solution, Capterra's big book of free software has something for you. So go get it. There's no reason not to. It's free. Capterra.com/twig. And, of course, you can use the Capterra search engine to find non-free software as well. Capterra is really awesome. But this is really cool. Free software. It's in there. All in there. Just go to capterra.com/twig. CAPTERRA. Capterra.com/twig. Join the millions who use Capterra every month to find the right tool for the job. Kevin Toefel, thank you for recommending the White Album. 50th anniversary edition.
Did you order?
I did immediately.
Very good.
November 4th?
That sounds about right.
Something like that.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
And you know what I heard today for the first time?
What? November 9th.
Okay. On Sirius XM, the only reason I subscribe to Sirius XM is because they have a dedicated Beatles channel. And as I was coming home from class just before the show, they were doing a tour of Abbey Road Studio, and they played the very first recording the Beatles ever made there, which was their audition. And it was the Let It Be.
No, the first one.
Oh, come on. Now I can't remember.
This was Capitol to sign them.
Love Me Do. Sorry.
Love Me Do. That was their first hit. That was actually a hit, right?
It was. That's what got George Martin to sign them. But they played the audition tape.
Is it different?
Yes. Yes, it's different. It's not tremendously different, but most of these, you know, re-recordings and all aren't very different. But it was very interesting to hear the very first Abbey Road recording of a Beatles song.
Wow.
Yeah.
How can I?
Not that anybody cares, but you.
How can I get that?
Tune into SiriusXM.com/twit. I don't know.
I don't have Sirius.
They sell an internet only package, so you can stream it.
Oh.
I'm almost positive they do. They have to. I mean, they can't just rely on satellite when the internet is kind of everywhere.
27 early acoustic demos, 50 session takes, and the original album's 30 tracks newly mixed by Giles Martin, George Martin's son. He did the Sgt. Pepper remix too, right?
He did.
Yeah.
And he worked with his dad on the whole Love show. That Love show is so good.
How many times have you seen that?
A dozen.
Yeah. It's so
every time
good.
I go. Yeah. I keep trying to get Stacey to come with me.
What?
Yes. She won't go.
She's too young. She doesn't remember the Beatles.
The last time I wanted to sleep. I'm so lame.
Other commitments.
Your Beatle commitment is terrible. You wanted to sleep.
I am not good. Not good.
It's such a fun show. Even if you don't like the Beatles. But if you like the Beatles, it's like heaven. It's heaven.
Listen to her. Yeah, sure. We'll go this year.
Yeah, fine. Okay. What do you got for us, Kevin?
Well, I don't want to do what I have for you because I didn't know it was kind of like something that one of your sponsors actually does.
No, I don't care. No. Please.
I do.
Editorial independence, as you know, think of me as Om Malik, is very important.
I mean, I did upload that picture of the Hulk behind me. If we want to show that for my thing, I'm fine with that. I put it on the show notes.
We'll show Kevin's picture of the Hulk. We were playing before the show. I am really stoked by these AR things. There's Kevin, and the Hulk apparently reacts to expressions, so he does different things. All of them do. But come on, give us your pick. I don't want anybody to ever feel like they can't pick something. Because it competes with a sponsor. That's ridiculous.
All right. Well, so this is actually sort of old news because it was announced in March, but it just was kind of re-announced on the Google Cloud blog. And this is the VPN service called Outline.
Yes. This was intended originally for journalists.
Exactly. But you can certainly use it yourself. And what I found really interesting about it, you can put it on your own server. Okay, that's no big deal. But you could actually have it hosted in the cloud through a number of host providers.
Including our sponsor, DigitalOcean.
There you go.
There's always a sponsor connection.
Yeah. But it looked to me, and I haven't set it up yet, but it looked to me like you can actually have specific controls around different devices in your house. And that's important to me because if I VPN everything, then I lose my YouTube TV, my Netflix, everything else. So I'm wondering, maybe on like a Google display, could I not have it connect to the VPN for those services? So I'm going to play with that. And I just thought to mention it because it might be interesting to some of the viewers who maybe are journalists or not journalists.
Most,
I don't know.
Most VPNs use OpenVPN, but this is Google's own open source and, I might point out, independently audited VPN platform.
Yes.
So you know what? This doesn't really compete because it's kind of roll your own.
Correct.
So, if people just want a turnkey VPN, they're not going to go to this. But if you're interested, maybe you want complete security and run it. One of the problems with the VPN is you have to trust the VPN provider. Well, you could run it yourself off your own server.
Yep.
Then how safe would you feel? Cool.
Pretty safe until I put a Facebook portal in my house.
And then you're done.
I can't wait. Yep.
First thing I'm doing is calling you, Tuffle. Kevin, guess what I'm on?
Don't pick it up. Don't pick it up.
Guess what I'm talking to you on?
It's Leo on Facebook.
It's 15 inches. This thing is huge.
The only way I would take a call from you is if we like played some vinyl over the internet to each other with the Beatles. That I can do.
Beatles music.
Because everyone already knows you love the Beatles.
Yes. Yeah, I already see
that.
Although,
what if you had bootleg content? What if it?
What if
like,
I
wait
do?
Wait a second. Where'd that come from?
Everybody has bootleg content.
Why do you think I need a VPN?
That's right. That's right. He's been sneaking into Abbey Road late at night. What do you have for us, Stacey Higginbotham?
So I do not have anything that I've actually tried. So I'm so sorry. I've been on the road. The world is a horrible place. But I did see this and I thought it was interesting. It is, let's see, it's called Helm. It is a startup that gives you.
I saw this. Okay? Yes.
Yeah. So it's basically a storage drive and a pre-configured email server that you buy and you put in your home. It's unclear to me if like it's a $500 device, but it looks like there might be other subscriptions related to it. Yeah, so it's $100 after the first year.
I read about this on Hacker News, and actually one of the really great things about Hacker News and Y Combinator is that you've got smart people reading it and commenting on it. So the immediate reaction from people was, well, how could this possibly work? And most importantly, most internet service providers block outbound email. So and furthermore, if you do it yourself, there's no guarantee you won't be blocked because most IP addresses are reused and most of them have dings. You need a clean IP address. So one of the Helm creators got on to answer those questions. So some really useful stuff. The CEO and co-founder of Helm. Cross-reference IP addresses we assign to gateways against known blacklists. It keeps you out of the black holes. They fully support DMARC, DKIM, and SPF, which is really important email authentication. They configure reverse DNS as well. This is for somebody who says, you know, I don't trust provider XYZ, whether it's, you know, Google or Yahoo or Outlook, to store my mail. I want to store my mail myself. They run your stuff will get run through Amazon's S3, but it doesn't get stored on S3. It's really interesting.
Amazon doesn't look into individual customers' S3 instances.
Yeah, but still, if you say, well, I don't, you know, I use Fastmail, for instance. I don't use Google for my mail. I use Fastmail, and I'm trusting Fastmail. But if you don't trust anybody, you're not, you know, Amazon's assurance is not going to.
Yeah, we're rapidly leaving that world where you could be totally self-sufficient.
I don't think that that's the case. But if you have always wanted to run a mail server, this would be a lot easier, probably,
than running a mail server.
Than running Postfix and all. Yeah. So it's an interesting idea. Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up, actually. TheHelm.com. But this is not for, this is, if you think Outline is hard to set up, not for the faint of heart. But you can run your own personal email server. I mean, honestly, if you really care about this kind of stuff, you probably want to get a business.
You probably do it on your own, yeah.
Yeah, and so you have to have a business class ISP because consumer ISPs block port 25, and you know they're not going to let you do because of spammers. They're just basically not going to let you send out email. Plus, you know, you get black holed because. But this sounds like a good way to get around all of that stuff. So that's interesting. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it. TheHelm.com. And it's kind of a cute looking box. Wouldn't mind having that in my house.
It is a cute looking box. Yeah. But I'm, you know, $500. Yeah. Kind of expensive.
A lot easier than setting up an exchange server. I'll tell you that right now. Yuck. Stacy, always a pleasure. I got a pick, StacyOnIoT.com. Get on over there. Sign up for the email. You get on her mailing list. Listen to the podcast she does with Kevin. You recorded this morning, I take it?
We did. And, you know, this week we did not do the same show.
What'd you do?
Exciting.
What do you mean you didn't do the same show?
Some weeks the news that we cover is like IoT focused. So I feel like we do the show, and then we come here and we do it again.
Oh, this show, you mean?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. No, in fact, you talk about a lot of stuff, including the Facebook portal.
Our opinions have not changed.
Many, but what you didn't know is Leo bought one. That's what you didn't know. And then don't forget to get the IoT newsletter. Kevin Toefel has a great site for people who are interested in Chromebooks. Do we have any idea when the slate is coming?
So, short of a Best Buy listing that had a release date of November 22nd that has now been pulled,
right.
We don't yet have.
Day. Oh, so it won't be on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah,
we'll be the day after
on Black Friday. Yeah.
No, because does Best Buy open some companies?
Oh, they do. They open at night on Thanksgiving Day. Maybe that makes sense. That might be a Black Friday deal.
Could be. That means I'm going to skip Thanksgiving dinner then because I'm getting me a Pixel Slate.
Okay. And apparently the Chromebook Spin 13 is live. Now, I have the Chromebook Spin 15. That thing is a monster. But
it's a beast.
It's awesome. It's a Chromebook like you never saw before.
It's a tank.
This is all from Kevin's great site, aboutchromebooks.com. Chromebooks, Chrome OS, and Chrome Tablet News. Thank you, Kevin, for being here.
Thank you. My pleasure.
It's really great to have you. You too, Stacy. I appreciate it. We do This Week in Google with these great people. Such great people. You know, superlatives have lost their oomph ever since President Trump has gotten into office. Because saying somebody's great is just like normal now. So I need a new word. Spectacular.
I have this problem too on the show when we're doing our show. I'm constantly, we have an awesome show.
Yeah, you can't say that anymore because it's like, it's devalued all superlatives.
We have a show. That's all we say.
It's a show.
We have a show.
It's a show. It's not great. It's just a show.
Yeah.
It's not great. It's not great. It's just a show. And we do this show every Wednesday afternoon, once a week at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Actually, in a couple of weeks, we're gonna have to fall back. Fall backward. We'll be at 21:30 UTC. No, we'll be at 19:30 UTC. I don't know. I'll have to do the math. Right now, though,
there's an app for that.
Yeah, it's still 20:30 UTC. You do the math. You could, if you get confused and you can't watch it live at twit.tv/live or join the chat room at irc.twit.tv, you can always get it on demand at your convenience any time of the day or night by going to twit.tv/twig or even better, subscribing in your favorite podcast application. If you subscribe, you get it automatically. You don't have to go out and get it. It pushes itself into your life. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye. Stop messing with the clocks.